Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com. Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Welcome to a new series here on the podcast. This is Stars and Their Cars. I'll be honest, it's a bit of a rip-off of Star and a Reasonably Priced Car, the old Top Gear format. Mm-hmm. And as Tony identified, this is your life.
Literally, this is your life on the old red book.
Yeah, the in-depth TV interview format. Yeah. Essentially, it's going to see us bring recognisable faces onto the podcast and ask them about their lives and their cars. And we're kicking things off with Jordan Banjo, who UK viewers or listeners may be more familiar with than our global audience. Having said that, he is part of the global dance sensation Diversity that won Britain's Got Talent back in the late 2000s or early 2010s. I actually can't remember. I think
he did say it, but it was a long time ago.
It was a long time ago. Mm. But now he's the presenter of one of the UK's biggest radio breakfast shows, Kiss FM's breakfast show, alongside another Diversity member, Perry. He's appearing currently here in the UK on the I'm a Celebrity sort of legend series, because he was on I'm a Celebrity about 7 years ago.
Done it before, yeah.
Done it before. Yeah. He's a hilarious guy, yeah. And we had a great time chatting to him. Got some really interesting insights as to what it's like to be a breakfast radio presenter.
Yeah.
A member of a world-class dance group, of which your brother is the leader. And then also a petrolhead and a petrolhead dad. Because at the time of recording, he was expecting his third child. He's just had it.
Yeah, literally just had it.
So we had a really, really good time. So we're hoping you're going to enjoy the first of a new series, Stars in Their Cars, featuring Jordan Banjo. Hello one and all, and welcome to Behind the Glass, your weekly automotive podcast hosted by two rather uninformed enthusiasts.
Nah.
I'm Sam from the YouTube channel Seen Through Glass.
I'm Tony from Gravelwood Car Sales.
And you can watch us each week. We hope you enjoy the episode.
Lovely setup, to be fair, dude.
Well, you say this, the setup looks great. This way?
Right, yeah.
Not this way. Not that way. And I've made a lot of effort today to tidy up that way because you were coming in.
No, yeah. Mate. So, you know what? It looks good. It looks better than what I would have done. So to me, wicked.
It's kind of you to say. It's probably the most artistic I've ever been.
But he's used to a proper studio.
Like, I know. That's why I tried to tidy the place up.
Do you know what? But to be fair, bearing in mind, me and Perry have zero control over anything at Kiss. Like, we're presenters there, but this is your setup. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. If it was my setup at Kiss, it'd be awful. It'd be a couple of bean bags. There'd be Domino's boxes everywhere. It wouldn't be brilliant. It would barely have microphones. We'd be recording straight into our phones. It'd be voice notes on WhatsApp. It'd be awful.
Super laid back breakfast show. Like, hey guys, what's going on?
Different start time every day.
Is it quite... So yeah, the start time's got to be quite intense, right? You were saying before, quarter to four, did you? Or four? What time do you wake up?
Yeah, so I wake up about quarter to four. I get picked up like just after four-ish.
Picked up.
Yeah.
That is a joke.
Now you know we're with a star.
No, wait, hang on.
It's got proper blue tick and everything.
Do you know what? I generally in London, right, especially after the show, it would be easier to get the train out, right? Because the traffic in and around Central, you guys know, it's a nightmare. Me and Perry are out in Essex. So getting to and from is a bit of a nightmare. But at that time in the morning, we physically just can't get in any other way apart from taxis, and driving every single day is an absolute nightmare. By the time you pay about the 4 million charges you have to pay to be in Central London, so you'd be doing the show for free, so there'd be no point.
Literally no point.
So yeah, it is a super early start, but now you get used to it, right?
And actually, that can be our first car question, I suppose, because I suppose you've ridden in the back of quite a few different cars.
Yes.
Are you now a chauffeur snob? So when a car turns up, you're like, oh, frick, not a 7 Series. you're a tall guy.
Do you know what? Yeah, my favourite car to be in is a Viano, I'll be honest. Purely because of the size of it, right? I hate being a passenger, absolutely hate being in a passenger of any Tesla. Can't stand it. And I know, like, there's a bit more room at the back because obviously all this is taken out and all that kind of stuff. I feel, even though I've got an electric car now.
No, you haven't.
I have.
Have you?
Do you not know I've got an e-tron GT as my daily?
Oh my God. Do you not know that?
No. Do you know what? Do you know what, Sam? Can I ask you a question? Why do you have this troll on your podcast every day? This guy, honestly, any car I talk about, I'm literally a shivering wreck before I mention any car around Tony. Unless it's a Porsche, it's game over. Yeah. He's going to dig you out regardless.
Or Ferrari,
yeah, yeah. Of course.
No, I genuinely regret ever even making contact with him in the first place, let alone having a podcast with him. It's a disaster.
Being in the back of Teslas, I don't know why, I just immediately feel sick.
Really?
So, I think it's obviously the power delivery is so different. Everything about it just makes me feel a bit weird. But
I feel sick before I get in one.
But I do have an electric car myself.
Do you think Tesla drivers are partly to blame? Because I feel like there's something in a Tesla driver where they're always determined to prove to you that their Tesla is great.
I think Tesla drivers, you can't blame them for how they behave because they're probably scared that the door's going to fall off every time they accelerate because the build quality on them. No offense, every Tesla, I've never been in a Tesla and not felt like I'm going to go, element, and something's going to crack as I move. Yeah. The build quality is not brilliant.
You've come on the right podcast to talk about that. So let's come on to it. Then you've got yourself an electric car, so not a Tesla.
Yeah.
An e-tron GT.
Yes. So I've got an e-tron GT as a daily. And do you know what? I'm not going to lie to you. It was a little bit of an adjustment. I got a charger put in at home, but before that...
Perfect.
Nightmare. Before that was an absolute nightmare because, like, I know there's chargers everywhere, but you pull up to one, everyone wants to go to the fast charger in your local area, there's a queue. Like, it's so weird to think, before getting petrol was like, you pop out, you get fuel, you come home. Now it's like, I have to plan an hour of my day to charge the car.
Unless you're not doing the mileage, and then obviously in the morning you've got a full tank of fuel to drive off in. Which is a benefit.
Now it's very lucky I've got a charger at home. I don't do crazy miles during the week because I'm always... working at KISS, I'm in central London. And then on a weekend, I'm with my wife and kids, and we drive her car, which she's got a Sport, Range Rover Sport, which is nice. And then I do have a car that, it, do you know, it's been in storage since December. I haven't got it, but I've got a GT3.
Good so man.
I've got a GT3.
Got a proper car.
Did Tony bully you into buying that?
Do you know what? I'm not even going to lie. The day I got it, this is genuinely going to sound like a lie, but I promise you now, before I upload a picture of a car, I genuinely think, what is Tony's comment going to be? What is Tony? Because no, it won't only be people think, oh, Tony's just doing this because he thinks he's funny on social media. No. I'll get a phone call. He'll be like, what have you done that for? And I'm like, come on, Tony,
but
mate.
You know his criteria used to be, right? He would only buy a car if it was £999 deposit and £999 a month.
There you go. That's the criteria.
And all the Porsches went normally over that, so I could never say to him, just go and buy a Porsche. Just pay.
That's it.
Yeah, but £999 a month.
That was my deal. Yeah. That was it.
But honestly, there's something in that. It's like the man maths, right? It's like that mentality of like,
literally,
what can I justify?
Yeah.
You go, right, my limit's a grand. What's the best car I can get for a grand?
That's it. Yeah. That was it. And that generally, it was funny because I talked to Tony and he would give me suggestions at the time and talk me into it. And the fact is, I know Tony knew that. He knew that I knew I was never going to do it. So he'd talk to me and go, why don't you look at this? And I'd go, look it. I'll get some figures on it. No, it's going to be over a grand. Not happening, mate. Not happening. But branched out since then, luckily.
I can totally sympathise with you because that man sitting over there bullied me into buying a McLaren.
Yeah. What? At least I didn't do that to you.
Yeah, I was about to say.
Honestly, I was like 2 years into YouTube. I made like a tiny bit of money.
Your green one. I remember it. I loved that car.
Great car for a short period of time. But I financially was not in a position. And we went to the dealer and Tony was like, I'll bring him the special coffee. Put him in that special room. And the whole time Tony was going, oh, that'd be good, wouldn't it? Oh, that McLaren. Wow, look at you in a McLaren. And I walked out and I went, mate, I can't do this. And I had a panic attack at the traffic lights in Knightsbridge.
Genuinely did, yeah.
Really?
In a proper flat.
A proper panic attack. And I called my dad. I called my dad. I don't know if I should spend it. I called my now wife. I was like, and he's just going, ignore them, mate.
Ignore them.
You only live once. What
yeah. Awful advice. I'm sorry. Yeah. Awful advice from there. Not brilliant. Friend.
But look, okay, let's wind it all the way back because, yeah, you're clearly a car guy and you've got a very interesting taste in cars, supposedly, according to Tony. But where did it all begin? Have you always been into cars or did it come late? Where did your interest in cars start?
Do you know what? My interest in cars, it's going to sound so random. Like my older brother, Ash, right? He's the one who's always loved cars. He's always been obsessed with cars. He's got a couple of classics. Like he's always really been like that sort of way.
You should have got him in.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you got the wrong one. Got the wrong one. But unfortunately for Tony, he's only got my number. So he only managed to get me in. So for me, it was kind of, this sounds a bit weird, but sort of like following him. Like I liked cars a little bit and stuff. And then when I remember seeing the launch of the first ever Audi R8, right?
Okay.
And then there was a TV show on BBC, it's going to sound so random, it's not 2006, it was called Survivors, and they had like a bunch of different like characters in it, and one of the characters was like this rich playboy type guy, and he pulled up in this like, in this R8. And I was like, I was obsessed with it. So how old have I been at the time? Like 13, something like
that? Okay, okay.
You two are similar age, I think.
How old are you now?
I'm 30. How old are you?
Oh, no, I'm old. I'm 33.
Yeah. 33, okay.
But yeah. I had the exact same thing with a Nicolas Cage film called The Family Man. Great film, by the way. Rom-com with Taylor Leone. What a babe. And at the start of the film, he's playing this like cool, wealthy bachelor. He's a bit of a dick. He's like shagging around town. But he's rocking a Ferrari 550. And okay. That was like the start of my love for Ferrari road cars. Because obviously when you're like 12 or 13, you're like, that's a lifestyle I want.
That's the one. Yes, please.
In hindsight, you're like, oh no, he was portraying a really awful human being. But at that point, you're like, yes, that looks amazing. So I get why that show started your passion for the RA.
You know what? That's so funny because you never really think about that stuff as a kid. Like you always say, that's what I want to be. You don't actually think about the entire lifestyle that comes with. You sat next to your mum, who's probably just being really trying to raise you to be a good person. You're like, see that guy is treating every woman like shit.
Yeah.
That's what I want to be.
You're
like,
only misogynist who's literally going to have the whole narrative arc through the film is him realizing that life is not about money and wealth. And you're going, I want the money and wealth.
Give me the car.
Give me the car.
Give me the car. Quickly. But yeah, so that's when the sort of, I would say, the love of cars kind of started from. And then we won Britain's Got Talent. And before that, you know, like as you're building up to get to, you sort of in your teenage years, you're like 15, 16, everything becomes about when I pass my test. You want to pass your test when you get your license, right? And we won Britain's Got Talent when I was just doing my GCSE, so I was 16.
Wow. Unbelievable.
And then, so well, 14 years ago now. So then I passed my test around the sort of time when I started earning a little bit of money. I was going to college at the time as well. And the funny thing is, right, I remember the conversation clear as day. My dad was sat there. My mum was sat there, not too dissimilar to how we are now. And my dad had a brochure for this block of new build flats in Basildon, near where we lived. And he said, I think it's a very, very good idea that bit of money you've saved up, you go and buy that flat.
Yeah, go and
buy it. We went and viewed it.
Sure.
My mum came with me. I was sat there, much to you, you had a panic attack, thanks to Tony. Yeah. I was sat there going, this was like such a big deal. I'm really scared. Like, it's going to be a property. Da, 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 da. I was like, I'm not even sure if I'm going to be able to buy this right now. How are we going to have to work? I'm only 17. All these big conversations, we're going to work everything out. I went, yeah. I walked out of there. I went straight to Southend Audi like a dick and bought an Audi A5.
Did you buy that?
Bought an Audi A5. I bought no property and just like squandered the money.
That seems like a better investment.
Yeah, that's what I did, yeah.
But at that age, how much fun can you have in an investment property? Do you know what I mean?
True.
Like, that's
true.
A tough stuff. Good idea from your parents. Like, Tony, I bet you'd be well behind that, right? Investing in property.
Yeah, of course.
Rather than a car. Like, great idea.
Although I invest in millions of pounds worth of cars. But yeah, you're right.
My Audi A5 is done, right? Yeah.
But it's hard to, motivate yourself at that age. A car's always going to seem way more exciting. And the Audi thing is interesting. So, weird sub story, your brother was working on a TV show, a dance show.
Oh my
with the guy
God,
from Coyote
yes.
Ugly and
Adam Garcia
and Kimberly Wyatt.
Yeah.
Yes. So in my life prior to YouTube, I was doing unit publicity for that show. So I was part of the PR team for that show. And they were doing one of the sort of moments, because it was like a Britain's Got Talent, but just for dancing, right? Mm-hmm.
Because he's older than you, your brother, right?
Yeah, he's a few years older. Yeah, he's 34.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so I don't know. I must have been only about 23 or 24. And they were doing these live audition days. And your brother rocked up in an R8 GT.
Yeah,
wow. So why R8 GT? I've got a picture of it somewhere. I actually posted it. About 4 years ago, I posted it on my Instagram. Just like, oh, look, an R8 GT. Never really mentioned who it was or how I got the photo. But at that time, I was like, oh my God. So I was supposed to be doing unit publicity. I spent the whole day drooling over this R8 GT. How come he was into Audis?
Well, this is a funny story, right? When he saw that guy as well, he was like, that car is sick. So the R8 just launched. And we said to each other, before we're 30, this sounds so funny now. You sound like such idiots. But obviously I was like I said, 13 at the time. We said, before we're 30, we want to have a big house that has gates on it. And we both got to have R8s. He got there a bit sooner than I did, to be fair, mate. I think he bought his first R8 when he was like 19 or something like that. Yeah, exactly. And I was there in the A5. Because, again, funny story about one-upping me, right? We turn up to this showroom.
One-upping me?
Mate, he proper one-ups me, right? So we turn up to this showroom and we've gone in. Sorry, so we've gone into this showroom and a guy greeted us. His name's Russell, right? Who I'm still really good friends with to this day. He sold me my e-tron GT, which Tony's going to...
What, and he's your friend, isn't he?
There we go. I was waiting for the joke. So he's greeted us. We've gone in there and I said, yeah, look, I'm going to like be buying my first car. I would really like to put an order in for an A5. And he was like, oh, okay. So, I went in there for an A3. He convinced me to look at an A5, going around. And this whole time there was a Sepang Blue V10 Plus R8 and a manual V10 Plus, and the V10 had just been released because it was only the V8, right? And I could see my brother over there sniffing around it, and I was like, don't do this to me. I was like, please don't do this to me. And I literally remember walking up to him, pulling his sleeve, and being like, Ash, this is my day, don't do this. And he went, of course not. Bearing in mind, I ordered this car, then I failed my test. So I couldn't even pick the car up.
You hadn't even passed your test?
I ordered it before I passed this. I was that confident I was going to pass my test. Then I failed my test, didn't pass till like the end of July. So they were like, oh, well, look, we've got the car here. We'll hold on to it so you can it can be registered on the new plate in September.
Lovely.
So I was like, okay, cool, we'll do that. So once I passed my test, the day after I passed my test, I remember thinking, oh, I wish I had that car. And I said, well, I'm going down there anyway. Do you want to come down and see if your car's there? And I went, why are you going down there? And I was like, why are you going down there? He went, no, don't worry. Do you want to come down? I went, okay. So I went down there, saw my A5 all wrapped up, knowing it's going to be another like 6 weeks before I can pick you up. Out of the showroom, he just rolls out in that blue, that Sepang blue V10. Yeah, he done me. He done me. I was wondering why they were being so nice to be on the phone about my A5. Everyone's being so lovely because you're buying an R8.
Yeah, literally. But, that's a brotherly move, though, isn't it?
So that R8 GT was the first R8 of many for us. He's had loads of R8s because I think he just loved them. He just really enjoyed them as a car.
We are very happy to say that this episode has been sponsored by Masterworks. They're back, Tony.
Yeah.
We love a bit of Masterworks, don't we?
We do, yeah.
If you guys don't remember, Masterworks did previously sponsor an episode. Essentially, they let you invest in fine art that's usually worth millions of pounds. We spoke about it before. We always like the idea of investing in art because, well, we keep seeing these articles about how values are just insane of Monet pieces and... That's about the only artist I know. I'm not really...
Yeah, you know it, but you couldn't afford one.
Yeah, I don't know a lot of art, and I like more modern art. I'm not so good on the classics. But, well, Masterworks have a whole range. They invest in, as I say, proper pieces of artwork, from Picasso to Monet and to modern artists like Banksy. They have nearly 700,000 users, and over $700 million has been invested in the platform to date. Now, they sent over some stats because since we last did an integration, they've actually done another sale. And that sale hands back a realized profit of 15% after just 36 days.
Wow.
I mean, that's better than most of your cars, I would say, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. It's well worth going to check out to say if you're someone that's appreciated art but felt priced out because of the insane values, or someone that's looking to invest money and gain returns like the ones we just mentioned, go and check out Masterworks. We're very grateful for them for sponsoring an episode.
How did diversity come about? I know your brother kind of started it, and then how did you form as a group?
So my mum, it goes back even further. My dad used to be a pro boxer.
Yeah.
Owned a boxing gym in Dagenham.
Yeah.
And then he retired from boxing, started selling secondhand cars, And my mum, when she was younger, she was in the Royal Ballet, right? So she was always been a dancer. And my dad said, "Well, look, I'm not boxing anymore. No one's coming to the gym. I'm going to. I think we should change this to a dance studio." So she
You could already dance, or
but by this point, I'm not even born at this point. Like 30 odd years ago.
Wow, wow.
So my mum starts this little dance studio, and then my brother's already born. Then I'm born. She's teaching all the classes and stuff. And then my mum had a couple of knee injuries, like I did, retired from dancing. So from when my brother's about 13, my mum's doing all the admin and stuff, but in terms of classes, my brother's running this dance school, right? Wow. From when he's like 13, 14, teaching every class.
Out of passion, or because it was like
he just loved doing it. Someone needs to bring the money. He just loved it as well.
And he
could
dance then.
So he'd been taught from my mum and sort of like, you know, going to different events and like watching stuff. Now on YouTube as well, man, you can learn anything you want to learn, right?
Yeah.
So he started teaching. And then slowly but surely, like some of the boys have been there like from when I was like, I've known a couple of boys for like 28, 29 years.
Yeah.
You know, like since I've been like a little baby.
Yeah.
You know? And
yeah.
Before we knew it, we kind of all got to that age where my brother was about to do his master's in, I think it was in physics. I was about to do my GCSEs. All the other boys, because I'm like, believe it or not, one of the younger ones. A lot of the other boys were starting to get jobs. And it was like, okay, look, you're at that stage now where you're either going to carry on with dancing, make a career of it, or you're going to sort of just pack it in as a hobby. And I think we was going to go down the sort of pack it in as a hobby sort of thing, really. And then we... reach for the stars, guys. Reach for the stars. Follow your dreams. Pack it in, mate. Yeah, smart.
Can you imagine him with his daughter?
Yeah, do you know what I mean? Dad, I wouldn't do that.
Not good idea.
Get yourself beyond
property.
Get yourself beyond a desk, mate. Put your head down. So basically, really funny story. My mum used to have fashion shows where we perform in shopping centres. And a Britain's Got Talent scout on our last fashion show of that season, where we was all basically going to stop dancing, come walking through and went, "Hey guys, I work at Britain's Got Talent. We'd love you to come down and audition." And we was like, "Nah, probably not." One of them was like, "Oh, we might as well do it like a last hurrah, see how far we get."
So they approached you?
They approached us, yeah.
How did they know that you was?
They didn't. That's what I'm saying. By complete chance, this scout was walking through a shopping centre.
Wow.
She was from Manchester. She come down to Essex to visit her mum. And she was walking through as we performed and went, "Oh, we're looking for some dancers, come and audition." And we were like, no.
It's the thing which I think maybe people didn't always realise or know about the shows is that not every single act there had literally downloaded the application form online and decided to put themselves forward.
Even like now, like shows like Love Island, right? I mean, I know it's a bit off topic, but like Love Island, you'll have producers and casting members scouring Instagram for people who seem like they've got a bit of personality and look a certain way, bang, and they'll DM them like, "We'd love to come and audition for Love Island."
Yeah.
It's not just loads to people going, "Oh, I want to be on it." It's like you get approached to shows like that.
Yeah,
and that's what happened with us.
They took it a bit far, didn't they, at one point? It got a bit scandalous towards the end of X Factor and in recent seasons of Britain's Got Talent, because you'd always see like it's this random act from Romania that
turns out they'd won in Romania's Got Talent 5 years before. And like, "Oh, they're really good." I'm like, "Yeah, no wonder, mate. They've been in Vegas for the past 6 years.
We've never had any success except we're billionaires."
Exactly.
But it was a lot more pure, I guess, when you guys did it.
Yeah, it was and just then super random. And then look, here we are now. You know, we went in. We was in the same year as Susan Boyle. None of us expected to win, to be honest. You know, she was sort of like a powerhouse. No one was more surprised than us when they announced our name. And then, we won. And then that year we went on tour. We've been touring every year since, bar COVID. And, you know, between TV shows, radio shows, other bits, we've just been like really lucky and just worked hard. And here we are, man.
Have some of the group come and gone?
Yeah. Okay. So when we first won, I mean, like a couple of the boys when we won were already like 25-ish maybe. Like now they're like, you know, nearing 40. A couple of the boys, like three of them were brothers, they left together. A couple of other boys sort of left over the years. So I think of the original 11, there's seven of us left. But because obviously we all came from our mum's dance school, the members now, there's like, so for example, there's a set of twins, they're called Jordan and Shante, who perform with Diversity all the time now. They're now 21. When we first met them, they were four. Because they were just at our dance school. So like, we never auditioned and brought new members in. It just sort of became like, "Oh, do you guys want to come on tour this time? Or do you want to do that?" And it just sort of, it's naturally sort of, some people sort of left and got and just moved into different parts of their life, and other people just sort of come up, and that's how it's worked.
But you obviously have to keep searching for talent, because as you said, like, it's a young man's game, right?
There's
going to be a time in your life where you won't be able to do it anymore.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like you said, there's already some of the stuff that you can't do anymore.
Yeah.
Because age catches up on you, unfortunately. 100%.
And you know, it's not even just that as well. Like, I haven't really spoke about this to anyone, but the fact of the matter is, like, now I'm in a completely different point in my life. It was very easy for me before to pick up and go on tour for 6 months.
Yeah.
Like, this year, for example, I've got a baby due in 2 weeks, but I'm meant to be going another on tour. Another one. I'm going on tour in late September, and I'm meant to be on tour till April.
Wow.
Like, if I do that...
What,
like,
for 6 months you're away?
Just gone.
From the family?
That's insane. Yeah,
that's what happened. So the hard part is like now it's, the lifestyle is really difficult because then I go, okay, now it's when we're in a place for 2 weeks at a time, moving the family up there with me to do that. If we have like, because obviously there's like little breaks of like a week off here, of 10 course. Days here, making sure I can get back. Where some of the boys, it's like I say, it's like Perry, for example, I've got 2 weeks off when I have my baby from Kiss. Perry's gone off to Miami. He's going to live it up. Like he's a young, even though there's only he's 3 years between us.
Oh, yeah, there's only 3 years.
Only 3 years. But he's like, you can like, by the time I was 27, I already had a baby and a second one on the way.
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I mean, Perry's like,
he's more youthful.
We're at that age, don't you find? But when you're in that sort of 25 to 35 age, you've got 35-year-olds who are still going out every single weekend. They live in their flat. They're living their, like, they're doing their thing. You're like, wicked, mate, enjoy. But you've got 25-year-olds who were like me, who had two kids, a mortgage, and they would just work. Like, yeah. You're just in that sort of weird sort of age range.
Yeah.
It's definitely a moment.
So it's more lifestyle as well for me with the whole touring and stuff like that, because it's just hard to be like, how long can I keep doing this, even in regards to my own kids?
But also as well, because you're at that magic 30 now and you'll be able to associate to this, you've kind of found your feet and found your path in life
now. Yeah, yeah,
so,
exactly.
So now you want a bit of routine, which you both naturally want.
Which is why I love Kiss. That's what Kiss provides me.
When you first got in one or drove one, did it live up to your hopes and expectations?
The first one I ever drove, weird enough, was the R8 GT. Okay. That was the first one I ever drove. And then after that, he really wanted a convertible one. And he had it was a V8 Spider. And the only reason he drove it was because we all went out with his friends. So it was me, all of Ash's friends. And one of his friends got so drunk, I was meant to be giving him a lift home. And
how'd you all get in a two-seater?
Well, this is the point, right? I drove, at the time, I had a 3 Series that I'd driven into Central London, and my brother said, I'm scared he's going to throw up in my car, so let me drive him back in your car. And I went, okay. And I went, so who's going to take yours? And he just gave me the keys. I literally so I had to do a 2-hour drive back from Central London in this R8, right? I have never been so scared in my life. I was literally like shivering. But you know, once you get that little bit of confidence after about half hour, I got to the A13, all within the speed limit. But just opened it up a little bit. And it was like, it just blew my mind. Yeah. It was the first sort of supercar I'd ever been in and really like driven for myself. And
did
like
you fit in them all right?
Do you know what? The Spider, so I had a Spider a couple of years ago. I had a... the carbon, but you know, Audi have about 15 editions of every single car. It gets ridiculous,
So, just 2 seconds. I don't want to interrupt you too much, but Tony once bought a standard R8, and there was one called the Le Mans edition.
Yeah.
And he stuck all the stickers on to make it out like it was a Le Mans edition, and put it on his website. And everyone, look, it's a Le Mans edition,
but everyone believed it anyway. Yeah. But that's the point. They have so many different versions. It was like, so there's like the rear wheel drive, the performance, the V10, the carbon black edition, the Vauxhall Spider. It's like, mate, it gets ridiculous, right? But no, you know. To your question, Tony, I had a Spider a couple of years ago, and mate, every time I got in it, I was like this. Literally, it's so small. And I had a Hurricane for about 4 months.
That's worse.
Yeah, that mate, so much worse.
Way worse. Yeah, way worse. I literally, but if I sat, well, Sam, me and you were the same, like similar height. Yeah. Right? If I could not sit up straight. I had to sit like a banana to see out. Otherwise, I couldn't see.
You submarine yourself.
And, the worst part was submarine. When I bought it. The worst part was when I bought it. I got in it. I never test drove it. I bought it off this guy. I went to pick it up. And the moment I got in the car, I knew immediately I was too big for this car. And everybody went to me, do you love it? I went, I just started trying to front it out. I was like, oh, what a car. What a motor. I love the driving position.
You're seeing a chiropractor every 3 days. I don't know why Hurricanes are so much worse than an R8.
Like, it's the roof, because the roof slopes down.
Okay, so there's more, because that's what it is, right?
It's angling
it,
roof,
If you drive a Hurricane Spider, have you ever driven one of those?
I got in one at the show. I went to look at a Euros, and when I got there, I sat in the car and they said to me to sit in it as a laugh because I knew it'd be too big. And I was actually just looking over the windscreen.
Yes. If you're our height, you look over the windscreen.
It's insane.
I remember doing a drive from LA up to Monterey with a Hurricane Spider, and I bought goggles. so that I could look over the windscreen bar. Like, it just seems dangerous otherwise. But yeah, they're anyway, it's not good. People are height. Supercars are a struggle.
Yeah, it's a struggle.
It's unless it's struggle. Ferrari or Porsche, then you're fine. Or a McLaren, actually.
Yeah, McLaren's thing. I watched some. I've never owned a McLaren. Right, I've never owned one. I did. Oh, I nearly did, didn't I? I sent you one not that long ago.
You did, yeah.
Getting your opinion on it.
Yeah. You don't need to say what it was because they all know what I'd have said.
Exactly. And then I started looking at like tutorial. I started looking at reviews of them, and there was a dude who was like, "I've lived with my McLaren for 6 months, and I'm a 6'6". I was like, "Oh, let me see," and he looked absolutely fine.
Yeah.
And I think that's a very, very niche and funny sort of requirement people like me and Sam have to look for, which is, can I fit in this car?
Yeah, am I actually going to comfortably be in this car? Because it's serious, otherwise it just ruins the whole experience. But yeah, McLarens are very, very good for that. Okay, so we got the A5.
Yep.
Obviously, your bro's just ruining your life with R8s every day of the week.
Yep.
When would you say the first, it doesn't have to be supercar, but when do you say like this proper first sports or supercar came along?
So after the A5, I stayed with Audi for ages. I think I owned like back to back like six different TTs. I kept buying just different variations of TTs.
It was basically an R8.
Exactly. That in my head, I was like, it's like a baby R8. But my first ever, like, I would say proper car, funnily enough, Tony ended up buying from me, to be fair, was my, so how old have I been? It was 2016, so I think I was 23. No, I was 22. I had an AMG GTS. Okay. And that was like my first proper car, like in terms of, you know, like a super, like sort of super sports
car. And you
car.
Can fit in them as well. They've got a lot of room as well, them AMG cars, yeah.
And I will say this now, going from a Quattro 2-litre TT that you feel like Superman in to buying a rear-wheel drive AMG GTS and thinking that you're going to be absolutely fine. As a 22-year-old as well, you know, you try and show off a little bit. You learn some lessons in that pretty sharpish. I'll tell you that for nothing. You learn some lessons pretty quick.
It's a Larry car.
Very Larry. It was when Paul had it. Do you remember Paul had his blood red one?
Oh, my God. We ruined it.
Yeah. He had the blood red one. And that meet, he so I remember the day he got his wrapped in that red, I just got mine like de-chromed and stuff down at Dove Customs, and we went and picked them up together.
Okay.
Because I was, the car before that, I had a, again, another TT, and I got it wrapped there, and coincidentally, I turned up one day at Dove Customs and Paul was there. Oh. I was and that's how I met Paul, and it was just really random. Okay. And then he heard about my GT, I heard about his through Dub, and then we went and picked them up together and we shot a little video. It was really cool, man.
Do you remember, was it before or after the red when he had that like dark chrome that he had to wax with like
mate,
whale's oil?
Satin like. Black chrome he had. Satin black chrome. And don't get me wrong, it was cool. But I was like, for the work you're putting into this, bro, wrap it matte grey and be done with it. Because this is insane.
The stuff that you still have to explain to me is like, oh, you have to get like 16 tubs of Vaseline and have to like rub it four times a day. And I was like, what? And it's just black. Like, you just got
literally,
a black car.
It wasn't. Yeah, it didn't do him any favours, man. That was a headache, that thing.
But quite a change as well from Audi to Merc, not just to a powerful rear wheel drive sports car.
Yeah.
How did you bond with the whole Merc thing? Because it's like super different interface and...
Yeah, it was quite different actually. Like you said, that was a weird thing. I think at the time, when you're that young, you hear like a... You know, like I used to do this all the time when I was younger, right? I would see someone's car and go, yeah, what litre is it? Like, that was the most important thing in
what's
the world.
The MPG?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, nice. So for me, it was kind of, again, referring back to Tony's famous, if it's not a 999 deposit, a 999 amount of car, but buying it. Merc used to have these crazy deals.
They all have, though, at some point.
At some point, they use. And now, obviously, the whole market's changed. It's not like this anymore. And you used to not be able to discuss it, but now it doesn't really matter because it was about 8 years ago. Yeah. But for that car, I put $3,000 down, and I think I paid 600 quid a month for a brand new AMG GTS.
Yeah.
That's why I bought it.
Yeah, fair.
I'll come clean, because everybody looked at me like, Jude, what are you doing, mate? How you pulled this one off? It's like 100 odd grand's worth of car here. I was like, mate, I'm paying A4 money for this. Oh. It's insane. Yeah, last paid 600 quid a month. Don't get me wrong, 600 quid is not a small amount of money, but for a GTS,
for that kind of car.
Do you know what I mean? It was crazy.
And back then as well, obviously, they were all these manufacturers, they were doing VIP deals for, and that's what you're.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns, so you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
He's talking about the VIP deals, and what really bring that to the fore, if you remember, was John Terry that time.
Yeah.
Do you remember? Yeah, when he, and he got all his family, all the cars. Yeah, and they were all mercs, and all his friends and family were all in these mercs at stupid discount money. And then they capped it a bit, didn't they, after that?
And Tony's right, because at one point he got so out of hand. Yeah. Like, I remember, like Tony said, people just buying cars left, right and centre. I'm talking, at one point, people were, without naming names,
just people.
They were essentially, like, they were getting their friends to open up, like, rental companies.
Yeah, they were,
like,
yeah,
wedding stuff. So they would go and buy 20 cars.
Yeah.
Like, so, like, imagine being able to buy an AMG GT. Because bearing in mind, you could get it on the finance, but think about the figures for that sort of car to be 600 quid a month, how much discount you're getting off. Crazy money. So,
and guaranteed buyback, right? Like, you basically have it for like a year or two, and you just give it back.
But if you wanted to buy it out, right, there and then, you could. So let's say the car was marked up at like 120 grand. That's how much it was. Mate, the discounts to get those figures to where they needed to be, they were selling it to you for like 70 grand.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Off the forecourt.
Yeah.
So people with the capital there would have gone buy five of them out, right?
Sure.
How much is renting them out? It was crazy. So they had to start putting like different things in place. And I remember I nearly missed out on a deal because they started saying you can only have, they basically gave you, like, you generated a code against your name to use for the discount. And you could only have two codes a year. And they had a deal on a just before the new shape of the G-Wagon. And they were trying to get rid of the G350s. They had a few left in stock. And I paid, again, this is crazy, I paid $290 a month for a brand new G350.
That's insane.
Yeah, man. £290 a month. And I think I put a grand down.
Oh, my
Something
God.
Like that.
Yeah, okay.
Dude, it's
you
insane.
You just take those deals, right?
Bro, and that's why everyone's like, why do you always swap cars so often at the time? And the reason why I had so many Mercs back to back was just because the deals were so insanely good. But then I suppose the thing was, in a weird way, Tony knows this better than anyone as well. It didn't seem like a big deal, but let's say they did like 100 VIP cars, all of a G350 or a GTS, coincidentally, because those were all done within a month of each other. As it was coming to the end of the year, there'd be 100 cars of that model flooded and the price went boom. It just tanked everything.
Yeah.
It was so odd.
Yeah.
It was like a really weird, it was like this own little mini ecosystem of like cars in there, and it just sort of affected stuff on a bit of a bigger scale, because if you get 100 cars and suddenly they're asking 20 grand less than everyone else, the price for everyone just went like that. It was really weird. It was really weird.
Yeah. And the other thing they used to do as well, now they tell... They still do them VIP deals, but now you have to keep them for a certain term, right? So you have to keep them.
They're no longer PCPs. Like, they're basically higher purchases. You just rent it for the thing and you give it back.
Literally,
which is smarter now. Yeah. Way smarter for them.
It was clearly somebody was helping their friend at one point and it's got out of hand. It
got out of hand.
Someone at Merck was like, wow, this has gone. I can't rent this back now.
This has gone too far.
But they were all at it. Audi were at it. BMW were at it. Merck were at it.
You know, Audi were doing it for a while, but they stopped, I think, after the, it must have been around, so when was the R8 first, like, fully, like 2007, 2006?
Yeah, 2007, 2008 was the original shape.
Right, cool.
Yeah.
So, around then, So it would have been about 2011. They stopped because they were basically giving huge discounts and practically giving our rates to footballers. And then footballers were going on nights out. And then every other week, you're seeing an R rate round the lamppost.
And
then they were like, that's it, done. And they just pulled the whole deal. They just stopped doing it altogether because of that.
Yeah.
So I feel like, the VIP deals haven't really worked out for anyone. No. They just haven't really worked out.
But strangely enough, even though you mentioned VIP deals, there have been manufacturers that are just trying to get cars gone. Like McLaren, for example, the famous one was the 600 LT, wasn't it? Where they were doing like £5,000 in, £900 a month, something like that, for a 600 LT. You missed out on that one.
I did. I was like, Tony, why didn't you ring me, mate? That's 15. It's under £1,000.
And I had the new shape NSX that was a hybrid.
Yes.
I had got off of one of those brand new, £900 in, £900 a month.
Why was no one ringing me, guys? Why was no one ringing me? I missed out.
Well, hold on a minute. You didn't miss out because you bought an Aston Martin on a similar deal. Do you remember?
Yeah, the Aston Martin was £1,000 in, £900 a month.
Yeah. Right. I mean.
And I loved that car.
Yeah.
I loved it. Personally, I did. And shall I tell you what's hilarious about that car? Do you know the only reason I started to go off of it? Tony. The only reason I sometimes would walk out and go, maybe it's not that nice. No.
Can I just say, stop talking to him.
Yeah, it's him.
Stop talking to him.
Because
he
him.
Has awful opinions on cars and he's a bully. Yeah. So just leave him out of your
life. The only time, do you know what? I felt like a kid whose dad had said, I love you for the first time. When I bought my Turbo S. And when I first bought my Turbo
proper
S.
Car.
That's it. That was the message I got. Yeah, that was it. I just got proper car. And I was cheers, Tone. I felt so happy that he gave me his approval.
You know, he did the same thing with him with the GT3.
Did he?
Well, it's your first proper car, isn't it? Brother Chucker, I got a Ferrari and you forced me to buy a bloody McLaren. What are you talking about?
But that is the first proper car you've ever had.
How's your final GT3?
Genuinely.
If I'm really honest, I haven't driven it enough yet to form a proper bond.
Same. I'm going to be honest, same. I think I've done about 300 miles in my one.
Is yours a 992?
992.
992 as well. PDK?
Yeah, it is PDK. Okay. No one have gone. Oh, okay.
No. He loves it. I don't dislike it. I just prefer the manual.
I understand why, especially in the GT3 where it comes from, people say manual. I'm too lazy, so I did go for a PDK. I'll be honest.
Totally fair. And I completely get it. It is different horses for different courses. When I did the bit before talking about, it's just what you prefer. But anyway, that car's a weird one where do you not feel like it's a bit like it wants you to drive like a nutter?
Of course.
It just GT wants car. All the revs and all the corners.
Yes.
I did the trip at the start of the year. I drove it to Austria and back and I loved it. I was like, this is amazing. I was flat out on the autobahn. I was messing around in the snow. Since then, I've done about 300 miles around town and I'm like, every time I get up, I'm like, I just want to red light. So I can't wait to do that, which I'm going to do very soon. But that's why I feel like I haven't formed that like emotional connection with it yet.
I will say this. The reason why I love my GT3 so much is because it's the first car of that sort of like my AMG GT and upwards level.
Sure.
That it either hasn't been a cancelled order on a deal and it's ready, like that I've gone into the showroom, I've sat down, I've spec'd everything myself, I've waited for it, and every other car I've had has sort of been, Joel, this is here if you would like it.
Sure.
That was what happened with my Turbo S. I knew a guy down at Porsche and it was at the time when they were saying, 12 to 15 months, then all this time waiting. And I was like, I really want a Turbo S. And he rang me, was like, I've got a cancelled order, do you want it? Beautiful spec.
Sure.
I loved it, but it sort of it sounds silly to say it sort of takes the magic away a little bit. You know, when you're sat in there yourself, they bring up the computer and you're literally picking, like, even down to the stitching, what you want.
Now you've teased us. What did you do? What was your spec then?
So, do you know what? I wish I could have said it was anything that, like, it was really, really jazzy, but it wasn't.
No,
so,
but it's your spec. Yeah, that's the whole point, right?
Essentially, it was I went jet black on it, jet black paint, so the metallic paint, and I just put, like a child, because somebody doesn't really matter. I put as much carbon on it as I could. I was like, carbon everything. I was just getting as much carbon as possible, please. And then I had like the racing yellow, everything that could be racing yellow to accent. Like, so from the stitching to the seat belts to the clusters, like, to everything. I had everything like that. So it's basically black and yellow spec. It's like a Batman kind of spec.
Which is exactly how I'd have it.
Well, have we talked about
My one?
Yeah. No. So, shock, horror, everyone. You've actually got three 992 GT3 owners sitting in front of you.
What?
Yeah. You just went and bought one.
When? Last week.
What's your spec?
Same as yours.
Basically same as yours, but swap yellow for blue. He's got
lovely.
He's got
the shark blue.
I've got a little bit. It's all black car with all the bits on it. Ceramics, Cub Sport pack, carbon seats, yeah. All the carbon on it.
Joe, I will say this, the club sport pack, right, it's funny. That was one thing, talking about our height. Do I get like the bucket seats in this? And I was like, I know for a fact it's going to be more comfortable just to get the normal seats. And obviously, I still got the club sport pack and the bucket seats. Of course, I still do. What have you got in yours?
I went comfy.
Comfy.
Do you know why? Because once you're in those bucket seats, fantastic, and they look the bomb.
Dude, getting in and out, though.
Getting in and out, I just, my legs
I give myself a dead leg every time I'm getting into the car. Yeah, I'll be honest with you, it's the truth. It's the truth.
Mine is as touring a specification as you could. Like, I've got no roll cage, comfy seats, manual gearbox. Like,
oh, lovely.
It could be a touring, but yeah, your two cars are pretty damn similar, actually.
Very similar, yeah.
I wanted to ask your guys' opinion on this. You know when you go in and you spec the cars, you see the wheels that have, like, they either have shark blue or God's red trim on them. What's your opinion on those wheels?
Well, Tony can tell you because he's got shark blue on his.
Have you got the blue trim around the edge? What's your opinion on it?
But I wouldn't have specced that. I would have just had them all black if I'd have specced the car, but I can't. It's a used car, so I couldn't do anything about it.
So that's what it reminds me of. No offence, Tony. You know when you used to see the adverts, it'd be like, they'd put them on there to like stop you curbing your wheels. Yes. It reminds me of that every time I see it. It's a weird look.
Do you know what I mean?
Like,
I guess I actually quite like it on your car because it breaks up the colour. I'm not a like black on black on black on black is your guys.
That's why they do it though. They do it to break the colour up.
Yeah.
So you know, then you have to have blue seat belts and a couple of other bits blue for it to all tie in. So it does tie in.
Have you got blue bits inside your car?
Yeah.
Oh, lovely. Okay, yeah.
Blue
cool,
stitching and.
Oh yeah,
and,
nice.
Yeah. So it does all tie in, but I wouldn't have had the blue ring. But
would you have a silver ring?
No, I've had all black.
Just like
all black. Like my 3RS.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's exactly how my 3RS was all black with yellow.
Oh, it was Archie's was purple, right?
Yeah.
Archie's purple. And was yours sort of wrapped in like a pink livery at some stage?
Yeah, yeah.
That's what I remember
when
about
he was giving it large on social media.
Yeah. I remember that.
Yeah.
So did the Merc, like, was there a moment career-wise that inspired, because you mentioned obviously the A5 off the back of Britain's Got Talent. Mm. Did the Merc or any of those cars come like, oh, I've signed that deal, or the Kiss, or anything that went, I'm going to go buy a car again, or it's just slowly built?
Actually, while you mentioned Kiss, how did you get that gig? Do you have to audition for stuff like that?
Do you know what? Yeah, sorry, man. I've sort of just steamed over this podcast talking absolute nonsense the whole time. We haven't even spoken about anything you wanted to speak about. Yeah, so Kiss was a really random one, right? So at the time, I was hosting a show on BBC with Alicia Dixon called The Greatest Dancer, which was really cool. I was having really loads of fun doing it. And me and Perry were approached to record a demo. So when you like go for a radio show, you do like a little demo, like a dummy show, and the producers listen.
Together.
And we hadn't done anything together since Nickelodeon when we worked on when we was a little bit younger. So he was like, oh, do you know what? It'd be quite cool to try something together again. Let's do it. So we recorded this demo. And we had a show, so funny thinking back to it now, because don't get me wrong, still a big achievement, but we had a show 7 to 11 in the evening on a Sunday. That was it. And I thought, honestly, mate, I thought I was Greg James. I thought I'd absolutely cracked it. I was like, look what I've done.
Yeah,
like,
mate,
I don't know how many listeners we had, probably not that many, but we just really enjoyed it. And so we had that show. Then we got moved to breakfast on a Saturday. And then during lockdown, they basically said, look, we want you and Perry to do the breakfast show. And you know, like you hear something, you kind of go, nah, no way. Because that, once you, rather than doing like an odd gig here or there, to me, I was like, this is sort of the next chapter of my life. I've still got diversity, but I'm not going to be able to do what I do in dance when I'm 40, 45 years old.
Well, you've suffered a lot of injuries, right?
Over the years, loads. Right? I've had like, I've had to have both ACLs reconstructed. I've broken this ankle. I've broken wrist. I've had so many injuries and stuff like that. I can already not do some of the stuff I used to do, right? And that just sort of comes with the territory. And I was thinking, this is going to be, you know, in the next 10, 15 years, this can be my day-to-day. This is what I do.
Yeah, yeah.
So when they approached us about doing the actual breakfast show, I couldn't believe it. I was just so, so excited. And it's funny, it goes to show how naive we was. I remember it was in lockdown, we got offered the job. And obviously we couldn't go into the building to do any training, any practice, nothing like that. And we had never done at the time a live radio show. All of our shows had been pre-recorded. We'd record them a couple hours before and they get put out.
Ah, is that how they work?
Or on like some of the smaller shows. And because we was on tour and our schedules at the time, that's how it kind of had to work. So maybe we'd do it on the day, maybe we'd do it a few days before. Just
did you know that?
When we had time.
I didn't realise that for some of the,
some of the smaller shows.
Sure.
A lot of the bigger shows, no one will let you do that. Everyone wants you to do it live. Yeah, yeah. And ideally, you should always do your show live, just so you can be responsive and reactive to stuff.
But it makes sense for scheduling, especially when you've got different presenters coming in and things like that. Yeah.
So I remember them coming in, and we was on this Zoom call. It was me, Perry, our now boss, and another producer at the time. And I went, so who's going to be like driving the desk and doing all the stuff live? Because obviously, we've never done it before, and the show starts in 2 weeks. And they're like, you are. And I was like, sorry? I was like, hang on a minute, mate. We've never even done a live radio show. What do you mean drive the desk? And I'm like, yeah, no, you've got to do it. So we went in about 5 days before we went live with our first show and just had this crash course in learning the desk. And ever since then, you just sort of learn on a job. I won't lie to you. There's been a couple of times. How ridiculous does this sound? One time, I paused Kiss FM live.
No.
And I remember my little sister going to me, oh, I think I missed part of your show. I was so annoyed my radio broke. I went, yeah.
Time to get you a new radio.
Yeah, you need to sort it out, Talese. Yeah,
you just pressed the button.
But literally, so you can literally pause the whole station. And I paused it. So we was trying to demo something because we were going on tour. So they set up sort of like a fake program of what it would look like.
Sure.
But it looked just like our real one. Me not knowing, our producers put it back to the real one. I've gone, yeah, we're done with this, simply, mate. Bang, just pause, hold the kiss. And then we've started going, so when we're on tour, how are we going to work the structure? Are we going to have an end? Having this full-on conversation for about 5 minutes. And I went,
where's the music?
There's no output. And then I realised I'd paused kiss.
Oh.
Yeah, mate.
So, because to explain to people, to driving a desk, so essentially as a presenter, you're there and you're in control of fading music in and out.
So fading music in and out, your ads, your
sound effects, everything.
Sound effects, your callers, Perry, my co-host, everything like that. You sort of do, even like Sega, obviously you have producers who work in there with you and they do. Mate, the show would not work without our producers. So big up to producer Rob, producer Jay, producer Grace, all of those. But
so they're the team behind. So do you sit down every day or every week and say, right, this is what we're going to talk about?
Like
this
a content
week.
Sort of thread.
Is that how it works?
So essentially, like every morning we get in. So the show starts at 7:00. We'll get in at 6:00 and we'll have like a sort of like discuss a plan. But sort of throughout the show and afterwards, we'll sort of go, all right, so next week, what's going to be like a content thread for us? And so like a random one was like a few weeks ago, I got a vasectomy, right? So that became a flipping, that became a content thread. And like, I remember what.
You're like, great guys, thanks. That was the whole plan with this.
Yeah, that was the reason I did it. It's hilarious because like there'll be certain things they just won't tell me about as well. So like I'll come in to sit down and then like partway through talking live on air, Perry gets out one of them Ann Summers candy thongs and he's like, well, maybe you should wear this when you get your facet. And they'll just do random crazy stuff like that. Like loads of things always happen. Like when I got married that week before, so for my stag day, I was there just chatting on radio and all of diversity. Obviously, not, I didn't know, 7:30 in the morning, just come running in wearing masks of like my wife. And I'm like, what the hell's going on? I literally got abducted mid-show and they just flew me out to Ibiza. And then on Friday, I had to do the show live from Ibiza, completely hungover.
Oh my God,
the day before,
amazing.
they'd throw me off a crane. They locked me in a nuclear bunker 100 feet underground with 50 zombies in the pitch black. They did, like, literally, they went all out for my stag. Kiss and my brother just went all out for my stag.
That's
crazy
amazing.
Stuff.
Really
and I remember cool. now, thinking back to it, one of the more uncomfortable moments of my life was being about 3 days... barely any sleep, super hungover, sat in Ibiza on Calvin Harris's farm, wearing a wedding dress with a broken strap, having to interview Calvin Harris and being like, so Calvin, you got new music coming out? Honestly, mate, I look back now, I'm like, what happened? And then I got tasked for the stag do. I had to steal something from Calvin Harris's farm and I just left this gigantic courgette. I don't know where I found it, mate. It's about this. It was like 2 foot long.
Oh my God.
Do you know what? Between Kiss and diversity, it is a proper odd, fast-paced life, but we have a great time. But I would say the only car that was like a landmark moment for me was the R8, and that was because I said, I know it sounds so ridiculous because we said it when we were really young, but me and my brother said before we were 30, we'll both have R8s and buy these dream houses, right? And when I bought it, so it was 2021, so I would have been 28 at the time, and I was moving house, so I had two kids at the time. I've got a third one on the way now. But
basically a football team.
Right, exactly. Building up there.
You're getting a piano next, aren't you?
Exactly. And I basically said, look, it's now or never. I'm moving house. So the day that I moved house, honestly, now I think back to it, I don't know how she didn't murder me. My wife took our two children and the movers was doing the whole movie, and I was sat in an Audi showroom with a latte picking up my R8. That's a true story.
What do you really?
The day we moved house. So
does she know that?
Yeah, yeah. I pulled up on the drive in it. So she knew where I was going, and I had sold it to her, like, it's my childhood dream,
that's
this car. And I
can't,
I'm thinking about it now, and I cannot believe she let me get away with that. Cannot believe. So when she was there with the movers, this and that, I pulled up on the drive, and obviously to my kids as well, I'm like a superhero putting up in an R8. So they were like, oh my God. And like, no longer do they care about their mum trying to show them their new rooms and like who's been working really hard all day. They were just both sat in the car outside, and my wife was on the drive, like,
yeah, literally.
And 2021, she wasn't your wife then either,
no,
was she?
No, we wasn't married then, so she still had time to get out, and she didn't.
Wow.
So that's good.
Wow. That, I mean, so I picked up the GT3 when my baby was 3 weeks old.
Wow.
So
wow.
We, like, our wives should hang out.
Yeah, they should. They put up with a lot to do a course, mate. They put up with a lot. Love that.
Oh, it's incredible. Okay, so you've ended up, so GT3 and e-tron GT, that's the current.
Yeah, and then, yeah, that's the current thing. Well, I do have a, an S-Rage XKR. Right, randomly.
What?
Right.
Where is that?
Yes.
What is that? What?
This is so random. So let me explain why. It's a really random car. And I just think they look sick, right? Obviously, it's got that supercharged V8. It sounds quite cool. What happened was, when we were really, really young, like, oh, it's about to sound like an X Factor sob story here. But like loads of people, didn't have a lot
of
money
and
stuff.
Is that how you won it, X Factor?
That's how I've got to. I'll crack this story out. This is what won it for us.
The producers love this one.
They absolutely loved it. But on a serious note, we didn't have a lot of money and this and that. And my dad owned a second-hand sort of like car lot. Anyway, long story short, somehow he comes into possession of this S-Rage XKR, right? And he couldn't afford to keep it, couldn't maintain it. But it was sort of like, it was his dream car at the time. And we were just, again, like my kids' reaction to the RA, when we saw this, we were like, oh my goodness, could not believe it. Anyway, it had to go. And I found it years later when I was about 22, 23, incomplete, the exact car. I mean, like, dude, it had, on the vents on the bonnet, there was moss coming out of the vents. Rats had chewed the seats. It was destroyed. Anyway, I bought it back off this guy, and I rebuilt it.
No way.
Yeah, I got it restored. So essentially, that's, I never drive it.
It's a sentimental car.
It's a sentimental car. That's super nice. That's what. But apart from that, they're the cars. Yeah,
Tony
yeah.
doesn't understand what a sentimental car is, because he thinks anything older than 3 years is a pile of crap. But,
Pretty much.
But I like that, because as you say, you're not really going to drive it, but it's just there for what it means to you,
exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
And I think if you're into cars, there are those cars that, you know, the R8 has definitely been one for you in terms of your life, but then also something like that. I don't know why, Tony, that's never...
Yeah, Tony, you don't have that. There's not one car for you.
No, that's wrong, mate. Because how many times before have we said before about some cars that come on here and
but
I'm sentimental about...
918 Spide or something like that.
Yeah, you know, it means a lot to me and my family. Because yeah, we bought a small village for it.
You know, I did have a Veyron when I made my first 10 mil, but I sold it and I now regret that.
I had to sell my daughter last week because I wanted to laugh.
If you could have, because the thing is, I think if you genuinely cashed outright and you were like, okay, I'm selling my business for 500 mil, you might amass a collection, and one of two of those cars may be more sentimental, but you're not today going to go and buy yourself a Sierra Cosworth. I mean, you couldn't, because they're £1 million these days, but you know what I mean?
It's a complete waste of money. Who in their right mind would spend nearly £1 million on the Sierra?
Yeah, that's nuts.
But so, do you know what I mean? Like, there's nothing that you would buy just to park up, just to be like, because of what it represents in my life. I mean, Peace is a bloody that, pretty much.
Oh yeah, maybe I should do that then. Maybe
have a piece on the wall.
And yeah, and just leave it forever.
Didn't you have one of those?
He's had six, mate.
Jesus.
But can I just say...
That was a stupid question. I don't know why I asked that.
Can I just say, right, there are cars down the years that I do have some attachment to. One being the 205 GTI. Yeah. Okay. Renault 5 Turbo.
Okay. 570 GT. Was it?
But there are... But I've had them, and I remember... In general, how bad they were back then. You know what I mean?
No.
And people, and
you
they go
say
up
that
in value.
Tony the hater.
How have you found Cole Pinkerton of the automobile world. That is what you have found right here.
The worst part is we host an automotive podcast and one of the hosts hates cars.
Hates everything.
Just hates it.
But they weren't... You say that because you have hindsight. You know how much cars have developed and you knew if you got in one now, you'd be like, this is a pile of crap. But at that time, mate, you would have been loving those cars.
Loved it. And obviously the Subarus that I had and the RS Turbos back in the day and all the stuff. I loved them back then. The V8 M5 manuals and stuff. I had a mid-engined... The Clio V6.
The V6?
Yes.
Those were just crazy, those things. I mean, who puts a bloody engine in the middle of a Clio?
Yes.
It's kind of fun. It's ridiculous.
So, one question, I guess, for all three of us. Tone, if you could have, of all your cars, right, that you've ever owned, currently own, okay, you can only pick one that you have to have for the rest of your life. You never have another car.
You can tell he works on the radio, by the way. Because he's now interviewing us.
What are you picking, though?
You can tell that we are. Brilliant.
You can tell that. He does it every day and he's actually better than us.
Don't ask me about my relationship with my mother.
It's about to be last story, Sam. Watch out, mate.
Sorry, can you repeat that? Because I didn't understand what you were trying to ask me.
Right, okay, cool. So of all the cars you've ever owned and currently own,
yeah,
you can only pick one car to own for the rest of your life.
Pista,
okay.
Sam. Which Pista? Sorry, I'll add that to the...
Yeah, okay, what, can you describe these Pistas to me? Why do I feel like I haven't seen the three of them?
Because they weren't online.
This is when he decided that he was going to go covert.
Okay,
like,
that's
I'm not going to show my cars anymore.
Yeah. Decided it's way more cooler for people not to know what I drive or what I have.
Yeah, true.
So. Go on, but remind Jordan or tell Jordan about the specs of...
So I had a blue one with tan inside.
Oh, lovely. Okay.
Light blue. Then I had a dark blue Spider, which was tailor-made, which is lovely. That's the one I'd have. And then I had a grey one with black inside.
Oh, sick.
Yeah.
Okay, so you'd have the Spider. That would be the...
I'd have the Spider,
the forever car.
Yeah.
Okay, piece of Spider. Sam, what are you going for, mate?
I mean, I have to say, sentimentally, the 360. I've got the 2002 Ferrari 360.
That is a pile of shit, that car.
I really thought the way you started that sentence, he was going, do you know what? That is one car I would take. Nah, he just slaughtered you. I don't know why I ever expect good things from this man. I don't know why.
He's an awful human being. I have to say that, but the very close second is the Jaguar F-Type. That's my...
Dude, I think F-Type, but if I think YouTubers are, I think you, man.
Yeah, that Dub Customs era, my F-Type lived there because I was re-wrapping it every week. So, those two, what about you?
What would you have, yeah?
Can I take the XKR out? Because that's not fair, because I feel like, oh, that's awful if I don't say that. Yeah. My favourite car I had, I just feel like it ticked every box for me. I just really enjoyed it. I really liked my AMG GTC.
Oh, okay.
I had the GTS, GTC, and the GTR. My GTC, I just loved. I just loved it. It was just mid-range. It did everything well. I loved being able to put the roof down. I loved all of that. So for me, it would be my GTC.
Yeah, really fair enough. And okay, and then final sort of question, car related then, is what's the dream car? Where are you at? Do you have something you're working towards?
Yes and no. Like, it's weird. I feel like I do this all the time, right? So I'll start to, like, at one point, I remember I kept saying my dream car was a Turbo S. And then I bought the Turbo S. And I remember it's really funny because I remember Tony being like, yeah. Because I remember I kept saying, people would ask me all the time, what's your dream car? And I'd go, oh, I want a Turbo S. And I remember Tony would always reply to me, go, buy one then. Then I finally bought one. And then after about 6 months, I was kind of like, yeah. Like, they're really cool, but it was like, okay, cool. And then...
They are a bit numb, aren't they? They're a little bit. Device.
So yeah. I sold... And then now it's kind of like... That's the one thing that always worries me a little bit, that I'll get something and then go... That's why I'm kind of happy I haven't drove the GT3 a lot. I'll have it for a while and then I'll go...
What now?
So what's the... everyone who listens to this podcast and is a big fan is going to want to spit at me in the street when they hear me ask this question. The new Shape Aventador reveal toe?
No. We just did this like very recently.
reveal toe?
Let's try it all together. Revel toe?
Revel toe, yeah.
Revel toe, yeah.
However you say
it. It's not a great name, is it?
It's not the best name, no. But I really wish you won't
fit in that car, mate.
Do you think Aventadors just seem so much bigger than the Hurricanes? I've never actually sat in an Aventador.
Not in the cabin.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I've never actually sat in one, like, so I don't know. But if I could fit in it, that Revuelta, I'm such a child. I'm like, oh, it's the new Lamborghini. That's what I want. But yeah, I think that would be.
See what I mean? So straight away they're creating that already.
Yeah.
Tony's big thing about that. He's got it all wrong, essentially. He was like, what, Lambo? Like, it's a load of crap. It's just an Aventador, like a facelift Aventador.
But
that's the whole point, right? So your excitement, and I think my excitement comes from the fact it's the big V12 Lambo.
That's it, man.
You're not getting in that to go around the Nürburgring.
No, you're getting into it
because it's the big V12 Lambo and the theatre and everything about it. It just excites you. It's the poster car.
I know this is going to sound funny, but like for me, like when you compare the brands between Lambo and Ferrari, and you know, this is actually quite what... When I look at it from an outside perspective, I look at me and my brother. I bought a Hurricane and he had a 488. And it's like...
It's a proper bloke.
They're the difference. I won't lie to you. The Lambo to me is just like...
For
it
chaps.
Just, it screams, yeah. Boy racer, he managed to get a bit of money behind him. And I'm proudly part of that team, guys. I'm proudly part of that team.
Paul Wallace should have been here this week.
he should have burst through the door in a second, didn't he?
Okay, amazing, dude. Well, look, you got the Kiss Morning Show.
Yeah.
That's 5 days a week?
5 days a week. So Monday to Friday. Me and Perry do that, 7
Is
to 11.
Into cars?
Do you know what he's just bought? He's just bought a Cross Turismo... Taken.
Really?
Yeah,
has he?
Electrical. Yeah, he bought one of those.
That's quite a good car, yeah.
Yeah, he loves it, man. He thinks it's really, really... Do you see that from Tony? It's funny. He hates electric cars, but because it's Porsche, he can't quite bring himself to say he doesn't like it.
But it is the best one, and I've said that often. So you know the diversity stuff. So when you go on tour, what happens to the radio?
We have to do it on tour. I won't lie to you, man. That is brutal.
Like, that is really
We toured
brutal.
Last year, and we did the Queen's Platinum Jubilee. And you know everyone at the time, you know, bless her, obviously she's passed now, but she, I think everyone kind of it was on the cards, right? She was quite ill health.
Yeah, yeah.
He was like, look, this is probably going to be like the last huge event for the Queen. So when we got asked to do it, it was like, of course. So we was on tour, we performed at the Platinum Jubilee, and we performed on the Britain's Got Talent final all in the same week, right? So me and Perry were getting up at about 5. Then because we could start a little bit later because we was doing the radio show from a hotel. Our producer was there, came on tour with us. We'd set up a whole mobile kit, not too dissimilar to this, except we have a transmitter here as well. We do the radio show, finish that, go upstairs, have a quick shower, go over to the venue. We do a matinee show, then an evening show, which wouldn't finish till about 10:30. Then you'd rehearse till about 3 in the morning, go back to the hotel, 2 hours sleep, back up. And then you'd be back on the radio show.
Wow.
And those shows, matinee and evening shows, they're like 2.5 hours long each. So it's like physically you're drained, mentally you're drained because you'd be like, oh, so that this year is going to be, the end of this year is going to be a tough old ass with the radio show, tour, obviously a newborn as well. It's all going to be a bit turbo.
And you're obviously the radio show, like you're proper contracted to the radio show,
of course,
right?
Yeah.
So, what do they do? Do they tie you in for 2 or 3 years?
With Kiss, they're like, I've got to say a big shout out to Kiss. They are like the coolest people. Considering I say, guys, we're going to be away for 6 months of this year. I know that you have like one of the biggest radio shows in the country, but can you accommodate
us? And it is one of the biggest, right?
Yeah, it's huge. Yeah, yeah. Like commercially, it's one of the biggest like breakfast shows out there.
And per day, how many listens does the breakfast show get?
Do you know what? This is awful.
You don't know.
I don't know. Do you know what?
You can edit that bit out.
Leave it. I'll be honest. I'll tell you why I don't know. I purposely, with TV stuff, I always check. With radio, I don't. And I'll tell you why. It's because for me, with radio, I go on there with Perry and I go, let's make the most fun that we can and bring listeners into it.
Yeah.
When you start getting bogged down with figures and trying to change stuff to what you think will help, it rarely does.
Fair.
And you end up diluting this. Like they asked us to do it for a reason. We have a fan base for the radio show for a reason. When you start trying to change it, you start diluting it to make something like, and it just, it very rarely works. And you end up losing more people anyway because the people that were listening to it because of what they liked, you're not doing that anymore. So I try not to get too bogged down with figures. All I know is that we get a report every couple of months and it's either you've gone up, you've gone down, or you held steady. And I don't think we've ever gone down. We've always held steady or gone up, and that's all I care about.
Yeah,
do you know what I mean?
Enough.
So that's what I focus on, that side of it, and just go with it there.
Super impressive, mate. I think it's, I couldn't imagine having to bring that energy every morning and have that vibe. I mean, it's tough enough when we do one a week. Sometimes we come in here, we're like, oh God.
No, here we go. Again.
Yeah. It's a nightmare. But look, mate, we've taken up enough of your time, especially after you did a show this morning. So thank you so much for swinging by.
Not all,
it
man.
Feels like we could do another two or three episodes.
Yeah.
Genuinely, any time, this has been, I've done quite a few podcasts. I'll be honest, mate. This has been the most fun I've had on a podcast ever. So anytime
we've heard that before, so we know that though.
And Tony strikes again. End on a Tony note. Of course we have. Thanks, Tony.
Well, we'll see you out on the road somewhere. If you see an e-tron GT being driven very slowly, or a black GT3 being parked up in Kiss FM's car park, you know who it is. But yeah, mate, thank you so much for coming on. We really appreciate it. Cheers.
Thank you.
Why don't more infant formula companies use organic, grass-fed whole milk instead of skim? Why don't more infant formula companies use the latest breast milk science? Why don't more infant formula companies run their own clinical trials? Why don't more infant formula companies use more of the proteins found in breast milk? Why don't more infant formula companies have their own factories instead of outsourcing their manufacturing? We wondered the same thing. So we made ByHeart, a better formula for formula. Learn more at ByHeart.com.
That's the sound of another sale on Shopify, in store. Shopify POS is everything you need to sell in person. From payments to inventory, Shopify unites your sales into one commerce platform. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/retail23. Shopify.com/retail23.